The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yeah, Donal O'Shea is with me, the consultant endocrinologist and the HSE National Lead for Obesity. Donal, you're welcome to the show.
Thanks very much.
What's an endocrinologist? How often have you been introduced as that and people scratch their heads listening and say, I wonder what that is? Yeah.
So
bugs or something, do they?
No, most people have no idea. And it's endocrinology is the study of the endocrine system, which is the hormonal system in the body. And there are little chemicals that are released in your body and travel around the place to do jobs somewhere else. And insulin is the one people would know most, that you release after a meal. It's 100 years old, like it was discovered 100 years ago. So type 1 diabetes up until 100 years ago was untreatable. And now we have people who are getting medals for having 50 years of type 1 diabetes. It's magic, you know, when you find discover the hormone. Mm. And the other one that most people would know then would be thyroid hormone, Eltroxin, if you have an underactive thyroid.
So in the time that... You qualified from medical school, 1989, to age you now, but 1989 when you qualified at a UCD. What has been the big change in terms of kind of health crises and the things that you would be dealing with in this country? What's different now compared to 89?
So, I mean, obviously I work in the field of obesity and population obesity has doubled over that time, gone from 12% to 24%. But the numbers living with severe obesity has gone up 1200%. So we've had an absolute explosion in severe obesity, while population obesity has grumbled to a doubling. That is causing over 200 chronic diseases, heart disease, hypertension, cancer, type 2 diabetes. And that's what's filling our trolleys and costing our health service. You have to estimate about 10 billion a year. If you look at the UK figures, the more recent one to say the UK, it's a hundred billion a year cost to the health service. Then we're around the 10 billion. Our most recent estimate was about 3 billion, but I think it's clearly gone up. The other big change has been individuals' expectations of the health system and the level of investigation that you can now do. So when I qualified, there wasn't a CT scanner in most hospitals in the country. So most x-rays were old-fashioned x-rays. Now we have CT scanners in every hospital. Not enough CT scanners in every hospital. We have MRI scanners. We have PET scanners. And the degree to which you can be investigated and over-investigated is a massive challenge.
Mary Harney is the Minister for Health I most closely associate with the kind of the start of a national conversation around kind of an obesity crisis or epidemic or however you want to describe it. Maybe that's unfair. That's when it kind of seemed to kind of emerge onto the kind of political consciousness as much as kind of in the health consciousness. Like in that time, and it's been a long time since she was Minister for Health, have things improved in terms of battling the condition?
Certainly we have established kind of pathways now for managing obesity that we're trying to stand up. And my relationship with Ministers for Health goes back to Micheál Martin. He set up the task force on obesity, the original task force. That presented to Mary Harney because he changed. By the time we reported it, we gave it to Mary Harney. So Mary Harney launched it. And then we've had two, you know, James Riley, Simon Harris, but it was Stephen Donnelly, the outgoing Minister for Health now, who was the first minister to fund obesity. And he's an engineer. Mm. And when we were lobbying for funding for obesity, he said, but look, I don't get it. Two ministers before me were doctors and they didn't fund obesity care. Mm. Leo Varadkar and James Riley. So what am I missing?
Yeah.
And I said, you are missing that people living with obesity are stigmatized mostly within the healthcare system. And you are looking at it through an engineer's lens, which is it's a chronic disease. It needs to be managed. And he has stood up services. And in the most recent budget announced full funding for the first phase of our model and the commencement of funding for the second phase of our model.
Yeah.
And that's a massive legacy for him, because the World Health Organization are coming to Ireland next year to showcase the efforts that Ireland are making in the obesity space.
Why does that attitude still persist within the medical profession?
There is deep-rooted stigmatization of people living with obesity, self-stigmatization of people who have the disease themselves, and then a fundamental belief that, honestly, if they just ate more, or sorry, ate less and move more.
Oh, they all eat less, move more.
Yeah. And we're going to give the money to cancer. We're going to give the money to stroke or scoliosis surgery. When it comes to that bun fight for funding, you know, in November every year, obesity falls off the, and in inverted commas, more worthy diseases win out. And thankfully, that is changing, and people are realizing that actually, if we treat the disease of obesity properly, you will prevent all those tertiary complications that people get.
Yeah.
You have to put prevention kind of pieces in place around, like, the sugar tax and, like, active commuting to school, and so that you prevent the ongoing rise in obesity.
Yeah.
But you must treat people who are living with obesity as the chronic relapsing disease that it is.
And as a disease, the causes of it are what? Are they environmental?
So they're a strong genetic predisposition to developing obesity. So if there's obesity in your family, you are more likely to have
but
obesity.
But how come then it was the rate of it was so much lower, say, back when you qualified and before that?
Oh, yeah.
If the genetics are the same.
So the genetics are the same. As you eat and exercise, you do turn on and off different genes. So, and we are designed genetically to store energy, and weight loss, energy loss is a threat. So what has changed in the last 40 years environmentally is we've engineered physical activity out of society. So we are commuting in cars long distances. In that car, you're not even rolling down the window anymore. So, you know, that half calorie that you burn rolling down the window doesn't happen. You press a button, and that half calorie 1,000 times a year actually makes a difference. People don't think those little things make a difference, but every single move counts. The electric toothbrush, you know, it's all those little things that we don't think about.
Someone here, this is kind of tangential, but when you're talking about the electric toothbrush, somebody here last week mentioned a self-stirring teaspoon that you can charge by USB. Yeah. So you don't have to stir your cup of tea.
Yeah, it's and people don't think those little things matter, but you just add up all those little things.
Yeah.
And then you throw in the high fat, high salt, high sugar food environment.
Yeah.
With packaging that's designed to hit the 3-year-old's eye level. So you've got the bliss point of the 3-year-old being targeted by the food and drinks industry, and you've got their brain in terms of what they package the food in, placed at their eye level.
So it's that the genetics haven't changed, but there's these genetic switches, if we put it that way, and the environmental factors, the changing environment flicks the switch.
The changing environment flicks the switch. And as you develop obesity, you kind of turn off a part of your engine, if you like, that in turn encourages you to develop further obesity.
Okay.
So that's why when you get this population doubling, you've got the splintering off or the explosion of the extreme
ends. Exponential growth at that side of things.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, say, the kids there, because what the food and drinks industry is saying is, no, we've got kind of robust protocols and guidelines in place that we do not target children.
Corporately, they say we no longer target them in any way, shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they're designing products for their bliss point of their palate, targeting their brain, and then putting their names on their bottles and chocolate bars. And if you're 5 and you see your name on a bar or your name on a bottle, it's not your name, because there's only one Kieran when you're 5.
Yeah.
There's other people called Kieran, but there's actually only one Kieran. That's your bottle.
Yeah.
You have to have it. And someone will get it for you. If it's not your parents, because they are taking a bit of parental responsibility or personal, your aunt will get it.
Mm.
Or your granny will get it because you want it.
And is it at that age or within that age range that these kind of genetic changes or these kind of changes in the brain that it's most dangerous, that you kind of you kind of put in place patterns of behavior then that might kind of follow them for the rest of their lives.
It's even earlier okay. than that. I mean, honestly, the genetic kind of emerging, if you're breastfed, your lifelong health trajectory and weight trajectory is that bit healthier. And, you know, the genetic predisposition that's there, if there's genes in your family for obesity, then you will be about 15 or 16 kilograms, that's what, about 2.5 stone heavier at the age of 18 than somebody who doesn't have those genes,
okay.
who's at the same amount and done the same amount of exercise. So by the age of 18, that's the difference that's emerging. And
okay.
then you set off into adult life. And the decade in life where you put on the most weight is 25 to 35.
Okay. It's hard to reverse engineer kind of society at large. You know, we're not going to go back to the analog windows. You know, we're going to keep electric windows. We're going to keep climate control in the car, so you don't even have to press your button on the finger. You can just most of the cars are the newer cars now as well. It's voice control, so you can just ask the car maybe to pick a song or turn down the air conditioning. So, given that's the environment we're going to live in, where it's going to continue to be easy and even get easier to do all of these tasks, God, even a couple of years ago, it was a novelty to hear somebody having one of those robot lawnmowers. Now, a lot of my friends have them. You know, they all have robot lawnmowers. That's the environment we're going to continue living in. How then do you reverse these trends in that context?
Yeah, so you look on all those advances in terms of the robot lawnmowers and all this, you know, that's progress, that's tech, that's all good. But you have to look at the flip side, which you have to engineer back in activity levels that occur in, you know, a different environment to the routine day-to-day activity.
Yeah.
And then you've got to address the ultra-processed food environment that we're being absolutely flooded by. And flooded by more in Ireland. I mean, I had a friend over from New Zealand who was horrified at our supermarket. He just couldn't believe what he walked into. The wall of selection box, sweets, high fat, high salt, high sugar. But he said, by the time you get beyond that, you're kind of almost dazzled when you get to the whole food section.
Yeah.
And it looks less attractive because you've just been blitzed by this glitz.
And I mean, there have been, again, people might suggest there have been kind of inroads on that front, you know, the traffic light system or whatever it is on the calorie counts and your fibre and protein and everything. You can find that information on packets of things now. Now, it's fairly small and the packet still looks the same and you still have all the glitz. I just wonder, is there any measurable impact from the introduction of policies like that?
So not in food labelling. Food labelling has been an area where the food and drinks industry have really successfully lobbied at a European level to block clear labelling. And they've just thrown arguments to throw sand in people's eyes. So now you would need a magnifying glass and possibly a degree in nutrition to fully understand the food labels and what they mean.
Yeah.
Plain front-to-pack labelling that is understandable for all is too far away at the moment.
We're tight on time, but somebody here has gotten in touch. I think it's kind of a valid point. They say, with all the discussion around scooters and hybrid cycling and electric bikes, the conversation is often about infrastructure and nobody pointing out that it means fewer and fewer people doing exercise than they might otherwise do. And actually, they don't say this, but I do know the research suggests actually most people on an electric bike were people who were on a push pedal bike. It doesn't actually get people out of cars. What it does is it gets people off of other bikes onto electric bikes, burning fewer and fewer calories.
And I think that's, I mean, anecdotally, in terms of people I know who are on electric bikes, they are off push bikes.
Yeah.
I know one person out of a car onto an electric bike. And they love it. And it's transformative. It gives you good headspace.
Yeah.
Predictable travel times. I'm not advertising for them, but it's really good.
Do we need to kind of formalise then some level of physical activity? You know, because we were talking about the Healthy Ireland survey yesterday.
Yeah.
So most people don't get enough exercise. And the overwhelming majority of the people not getting enough say they want to do more. I want to do more, but I can't do it. I'm too busy. I don't have enough hours in the day and what have you. And without kind of pouring through all of that, you kind of... You could approach it and say, we need to introduce kind of formal activity breaks. You start it in schools, kind of a much more expansive PE program effectively is what it would look like. And eventually it bleeds all the way through to the office space.
Yeah, I think looking at schools, I think schools are asked to do so much and they're flooded. And if we ask them to solve the physical activity issue, it's not going to be the solution. Physical activity levels drop for kids in Ireland at the weekend when they have the time and
yes.
they're at home. So, you know, I think we need to prioritise schools. I saw a cycle desk yesterday. So the latest kind of office kit is your desk on a bike. So you can be, it's an exercise bike effectively.
Yeah.
But your desk is what it is. Do we need that kind of stuff? I think we need to be innovative about how we're active. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, listen, there's so many more things on this front in this space we could talk about, but we are out of time. Donal, thanks a million for coming into us.
Thank you.
Donal O'Shea, consultant endocrinologist, we all know what it is now, and HSE National Clinical Lead for Obesity. Back in a moment.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.